Hello and welcome to Here in LA, a very special edition. Today we talk with Sherman Gray, who along with his girlfriend are trying to get off the streets using LA Mayor Karen Bass's Inside Safe program. Sherman was born in New York City, where his mom met his father, a reggae musician. Soon, they moved to California, where he spent most of his life. As an adult, Sherman found himself becoming addicted to drugs like heroin and fentanyl, which led to a life of crime, prison, and homelessness. Over the last year and a half, he and his beautiful girlfriend have both been clean and sober after Sherman had a terrible health scare. He will tell us his story, including what's true and false about fentanyl and how to help people kick it, and what it was like going through withdrawals in prison, and what people should know when they encounter homeless people. In return, we're helping him find ways here in LA to get off the streets via the mayor's program. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook as we will update it with regular updates as he and his girl go through the system. So please welcome Sherman Gray. Hey everybody, we are here with Sherman Gray. Hey!
Hey, how are you doing?
Sherman, thank you so much for being here today. Sherman helped me with my television. God bless you. And as we were talking, we were like, you would make a great guest on the podcast. So thanks for coming here.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Thank you.
Let's talk about where you grew up.
Well, I was born in New York City, in the Lower East Side, New York. And when I was about 3 years old, I moved to Corona, California, which is in Riverside County. And I lived there pretty much for about till I was 24 or something like that.
You lived in Lake Elsinore for a little while?
Yeah, I lived in Lake Elsinore for maybe the last 10 or 12 years. Well, basically 10 years, and I've lived here in LA for the last 2 years.
I've never been there. What's it like?
Well, it's a really nice town. It's a mostly like a sort of a bedroom town. Mostly little kids and old people, but if you're not, there's a large percentage of homeless people there. If you're not a family or a person with a family and kids and stuff, or you haven't became a senior, it's mostly everybody in between that is probably homeless. Or
why is it good for homeless people?
Because it's an opened area. It's around a lake, so a lot of people like go down, and for a long time the Riverside County Sheriff's Department and the people, they didn't care that, because people would just go down there and live at this place called the Lake Bottom, which was around the lake, which is basically, in case the lake floods out, it kind of it can absorb all the water, and there's like little man-made levees around so it won't spill out onto the streets and stuff like that, but it hardly ever floods, so people live down there and stuff like that. And I guess they passed a law that drugs weren't so much of a felony and stuff like that. You know, they didn't really care what was going down there. But so rich people started going to the city and saying, hey, there's people living down there, which was never none of their business. Just worried about stuff that's not their business, saying, oh, there's a bunch of people down there using drugs and doing stuff like that. And mostly those areas are owned by one large part of the lake bottom, or large parts of this area, that land, that free open land, was owned by a Chinese guy. And this guy was a rich guy, Chinese guy, like rich, like a trillionaire or something like that. And he just, you know, and they would bother him and say, hey, there's a bunch of people. And then he'll, after them trying to get back to him and you know, go call, you know, his offices or whatever, or talk to his secretary, and they would never be able to get a hold of him because he didn't care and he doesn't want to talk to any hillbilly Riverside County Sheriff's Department person. And so then they would say, hey, well, we're going to start ticketing you because they're putting garbage down there. And he's all, so what? I'm rich. I'll just pay the tickets. I'll pay him. And then I guess they did something to blackmail him to where he was, you know, like, it's because they wanted him to sign this thing called a 602, which would enable them to act as him if they weren't there. And so, you know, they made.
So it sounds like, were you one of the homeless people by?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So it sounds like you guys were camping out on private property.
Yeah.
This Chinese guy.
The police were blackmailing him and said, hey, well, we're not going to provide any police action for you in any of the other areas that you own if you don't sign this 602 and be able to. And it was funny because the way that they did it, they came out at first with these people called the SWAG, which is it's called Social Work Action Group, which none of them are social. They're just part of the police force. So not really officially, but they're just police agents or whatever. And they came out, and the first time I seen them, you know, I knew, who the hell are these people, you know, coming out. They were trying to come with socks and stupid stuff that, you know.
Wait, I thought I'm supposed to give homeless people socks.
Well, you know what? We get to that part in a little bit later on what
it was.
I
just
think
a suspicious gift.
Just giving people the things, you know, like stuff that, you know, just coming in to bother, basically to spy and see what was going on down there.
I see.
And, you know, I think that those people, those landowners, they didn't care. There's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of open space around there, a lot of open land. And, you know, it's either owned by corporations or privately by people. And they just bothered these people till they signed these legal documents saying that they could act as as them, you know, and then basically come and bother you. And, you know, and I just think that was wrong. And it was all started because some rich people that lived around there in Elsinore, somebody's wife that heard about us living down there and using illegal drugs down there, it got mad and decided to, well, you know, bother the city council. And then they went into the Riverside County Sheriff's Department and basically came and violated people's rights by, you know, like coming in, you know, uprooting their camps or, and some of these people own things like generators and own things that they put their own money into and just taking them and repossessing them and bothering people with no probable cause, you know, just illegal stuff, you know.
So did they ever do this to you and your property?
Yeah, they did different times when I, you know, and a couple a different time, like even see, I see a lot of the difference between a lot of the people here that are homeless and a lot of the people that are Riverside County. And, you know, when you think of a guy, you know, that's sitting on a sidewalk, either masturbating on or running around naked or, I don't know how the people, I just seen a lot of more wild stuff out here in LA than I would see when I had my camp in camps and stuff like that. I would have everything I needed, you know, and I would go to, you know, the gym and take a shower. And, you know, I was homeless, but I did it like, you know, like I had clothes and I go wash my clothes and different stuff like that, and so on with my
you weren't whacking off in public.
No masturbation.
You weren't running around naked.
And even if I was, it was out there in the trees and the bushes where nobody was there to stop you from doing. You know, it was really cool. You know. Couldn't go to sleep, and then so, you know, I had a friend at work, you know, after work one day, and I was like, damn, I'm really tired. And he was like, well, do you want to smoke a little meth? And I was like, no, I'm cool. And then, you know, a couple days in, you know, after I said, you know what? Maybe I'll take you up on that, you know, and you know, and so he gave me a little meth to smoke before work. And then I was all, whoa, you know, and I was getting through my day and, you know, it was, you know, and
it kept you awake.
It kept me awake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this, you know, but the downside of that is a lot of people make that mistake of thinking that crystal meth is going to keep you going, and it does, but there's it also starts making you sensitive to things like heat and light, and you don't want, if somebody says something, you don't want to be there and listen to their, and I just ended up quitting the job, you know, and my mom, you know, she was kind of dependent on me, you know, and she had just got her she just got her license to take care of old people. She was a caretaker, and she was went through these courses and stuff like that. And I was, and you know, and I had sacrificed so much stuff during the time, you know, that I was living with her, you know, helping her pay. I was paying the rent, paying all the rent, sacrificed, you know, trips that I wanted to go on and things that I wanted to do. And I kind of got a little depressed, you know, I would have been all right, you know, and maybe lasted through the job. But when you're like that, you don't, you just want to.
So the solution is not meth.
Well, no, because it leads you on to other stuff, you know. You know.
But before you go to that, tell me a little something about meth, because a lot of, I would imagine a lot of my listeners have never done it before.
Well,
but we hear of a lot of people doing it. So there must be some pleasurable aspect of crystal meth other than it allows you to work.
Well, a little bit of history on it. It was invented in the turn of the century in Japan by It was invented in the turn of the century in Japan by some Japanese scientist, and then in World War I, German scientists, adopted it as far as cold medicine.
It's in our cold medicine?
Yeah, ephedrine.
Oh.
Like, you know, Sudafed and things like
Sudafed
that.
Sudafed is basically crystal meth?
Well, it's a precursor to precursor to making it.
Yeah.
And there's other, you know, like that's just like the cheap, there's other ways of making crystal meth. There's 1,000 different ways, but that's the cheapest way that anybody just, you know, in their house, you know, and could make it. Is so, yeah, after.
Well, hold on. The first time you did it at your buddy's house.
Yeah.
Where was that? Was that in Elsinore?
The first time I ever did it was maybe almost 30 years ago. The night Eazy-E died in 1995.
Wow.
I was 16 years old, and some friends of mine after high school, and they all were smoking it. So I started doing it, and I did that for about a couple weeks till I see my friends all lived in this one neighborhood in the town, and I lived outside on the outskirts of the town. So I ended up going home, and I ended up being just up by myself late at night, and I didn't like it no more. And then and I was a young kid, and
let me ask you about the first time, though. Did you like it the first time?
When I was a little kid? When I first tried it?
Eazy-E's death.
It was fun. It was all right.
But how did it make you feel, though?
It was all right, but back then I was a little kid, and I didn't like it was nothing like how weed. So I quit. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that.
You did it once and you were done.
I did it maybe a couple different times, and I did cocaine a couple different times.
Did cocaine make you feel good?
It was all right. It was okay. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like it, though, after a while. I just went back to weed, and I would do mushrooms and LSD and stuff like that.
We'll get to all of the drugs. You know I love drugs. So, yeah. But I'm trying to figure out. Cocaine you didn't like because it made you edgy too?
Yeah, this is when I was younger. But it, fast forward to 30 something years later, in 2000, like 15 or something like that. When I was like, you know, a grown man, and I was a little bit able, you know, and I started liking it because I, you know, actually I was. When I was kind of like sheltered from what was going on in the rest of Elsinore, you know, I was kind of going to work, helping support my mom, support the house. And when I started doing crystal, I ended up like meeting a lot more people and talking to hanging out late at night and going and actually, and I was sitting, when I moved to Elsinore, I was like, this town is shitty, man. I was like, where are all the girls at? I had just moved in 2013. Back here to Elsinore from Miami, and I was just like, oh man, this is so fucking boring. I looked up and the Ortega Mountains are right, and I looked up and I'm all, what the fuck did I, where did I get myself into? Like, why did I move back here?
Well, now you have this beautiful Afghani girlfriend.
Well, that came
did
later.
She just did she just float above the river and say hello?
I met her around in Elsinore.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I met her in Elsinore.
She did rise from the river, or
yeah,
the lake.
Yeah, she and then like, you know, and actually I met her because I used to sell pills like Xanax, hydrocodone.
Where would you get those?
I would get them from back then. It was easy. I had a connect, another girl named my friend Zandra. Shout out to Zandra. had a connect.
Usually people protect their sources. You're
She's clean and
good. How did she get the pills?
She got them from, she had a lot of connections to different stuff, man. She, back then, she's retired now, but she had a lot of connections.
So she would get a big jar.
Different pills. No, she would just give them to me on a consignment. And we were such good friends that, you know, she would never worry about me ripping. And I never That's thought great. About ripping her off or anything like that.
Beautiful.
And so I met her one time when some guy, Alacran, it means scorpion in Spanish.
Oh shit.
Yeah, he brought her, I actually met her, but she doesn't remember it, but he brought her by my house to buy some pills, and I guess she just wanted to get away from him because he's a dork.
Oh.
And so she was hanging out with me, and we started hanging out, and just, you know, it kind of took about a year or something of, you know, back and forth, and she would disappear off and go whatever, and you know, not so. And we started hanging out after that, you know, and yeah.
Did you ever get busted selling pills?
No. That's I didn't great. Sell. Get busted selling. I got busted selling marijuana in Miami because marijuana is illegal over there. I don't know about now.
Which is crazy.
And cocaine. I got busted. Sales charge over there.
But never
here in California. No, I've been caught with I never got caught with illegal pills or possession of pills illegally, but I got caught with, I got busted for crystal meth, you know, you name it, heroin, fentanyl. And I've been, if you read my jacket, I've been busted for everything, LSD, everything since I was a young kid, but.
Is weed your favorite of all the drugs?
Weed, I remember a long time ago that I always said, you know what, I'm going to hold on to weed. I'm not going to, you know what, because I might need it sometime. So I kind of didn't really smoke it for a long time, but I like weed, but I got to start off maybe with one hit or something and go sit down and watch TV.
Yeah.
I can't walk around and talk to people. I can't sit there and talk to people when I'm high. It feels like on Fridays when Ice Cube was or he was like, oh, my heart is true. You know, you it tends to it's classified as a hallucinogenic. So it's kind of like it could tend to, I remember when I was first started smoking it, I for a year when I was in ninth grade, I didn't smoke it at all. I would just like drink beers and go out and try to talk to girls and stuff like that and meet girls I didn't like. And then I remember I dropped all that when I started smoking weed in the weed was like a gateway to LSD and crystal meth.
Mm-hmm.
And cocaine came later, which is usually the other way around for people. Usually the cocaine is first and then they do crystal meth later. But in my town, in the Inland Empire, Riverside County was probably one of the first places in the world where it was prevalent. You know, mm-hmm. crystal meth was, you know.
How would you smoke crystal meth?
Crystal meth, you just go to the store and buy a pipe, a glass bubble, and
so it's not the straight ones. The straight ones are for crack,
crack cocaine. The straight one is you get choy and you burn that choy and then you put it in a stem, a straight one, and then you stuff it in there and then you put the crack on the pipe and you smoke it like that. But it's crystal meth ain't like that. It's actually a vapor that you're smoking. You put the crystal meth in that bubble and you heat, and there's a glass between the fire and the stuff. It's not straight.
Mm-hmm.
You like crack where there's a fire to the actual drug. No, it's not like that.
So it sounds like you've done crack too.
Yeah, I used to do crack. I used to make crack, and I used to work for a guy named Pua in Miami, and shout out to him too. he's in a federal prison right now.
You're shouting out. Is it okay to shout out
these people? They know me. They know what they've done, and they know whatever. They know.
Shout out who then? Pui?
Pua. He's a black Cuban guy in Miami. He's like a big time. I don't know what he's doing now, but yeah.
Okay, you know. So you said that you've gotten popped a few times.
Yeah.
Did you ever go to jail or prison?
Yeah, I've been to county jail, and the last one was I was in a prison, where you get charged with it. It's like the system is so crowded that they in the county they have a prison, like a pod basically that you go to. You get a prison number, and now you got a prison jacket, and you got a. So the next time, anytime after that, you're going to end up going back to state prison. You don't go to county jail anymore if you do bad stuff. If it's something light or whatever the lawyer can work out for you, maybe you might get a couple months or something in the county jail. They could do that. But if you have like a bad record and you have like a, you know, points that you score out, you're going to go back to prison. Like if you do.
So you were in this pod. Yeah. Which is county jail.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
How many people in your cell?
It could probably be about in a Metro West facility. So this is in Miami. There's probably like 80 people in that big 80. Room. Yeah.
And how long were you in this room with 80 people?
80 room. And they have a police officer that's at a desk. And some of these places out there in Florida and Miami, they would be this old army barracks called the stockade. They didn't have nobody in there. So whatever's happening in there happens. You know,
you're on your own.
Yeah. And it was a pretty rough place.
So you're in this 80 room. Are there 80 beds?
There's 80 beds.
Okay. So bunk beds.
Yeah. There's
so 40 bunk beds, let's say
40 bunk
beds. And at the end of it, there's a cop who can keep an eye on you guys.
Yeah.
How old were you?
Me, the first time I ever went to the county, just county jail, it was my first charge. I was probably 25 years old.
25.
Which is kind of considered in the crime world being a late bloomer of that. You know, usually people that are going, that start out and that stuff, start out in juvenile hall and youth authority.
Yeah.
Way younger, 15, 16 so years
so
old.
So you're a little older. Even. You're a little older than some of the people.
Yeah, more.
You are in a bunk bed.
Yeah, but it ranges from 18 to 60 years old.
Right.
Well, actually, if you're past, they have a senior cell. Like sometimes I would deliver and I'd see all these old guys at walkers and they're like, hey, and then a new guy would be hitting another guy.
Sometimes. A guy in a walker is hitting people.
Yeah, I've seen these bad, like, this is like, you know, you go in there, there's a bunch of old men, and like, you know, And then one guy would be like, and they're playing cards. And, hey, you stop that. And then it'll just whack him over the head.
Wow.
With the cane. And that, you know, that was just one time I saw that. That was pretty funny. But
so in your 80 man room.
Yeah.
Is there violence going on in there?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you'll know when when some things are something like that's going to happen, whether it's maybe seven people on 10 people violence, or when it's going to be, because most of the time everybody's talking up a storm and or you hear everybody in there, but all of a sudden you just won't hear anybody.
Uh-oh.
And then like all of a sudden it just starts.
Right.
And you know, like, yeah, that's happened a couple different times, whether it was racial or whether it was, it was blacks on blacks, or it was Latinos on blacks, mm-hmm. Or rather it was just one or two guys. And sometimes depends on how the cell is set up. Maybe there's somewhere where there's a camera. The camera will not see those people fight.
Mm. So
excuse me.
So for the people who can't see you, you're a very handsome, mixed race man. Your mom is white.
Yeah, my mom's white, and my dad, he was from Jamaica.
So yeah. So where do you fit in the racial jail? Yeah,
that was a thing too. That was a thing too. I grew up in an all Mexican white city, mm-hmm. and you know, at first I tried, you know, crisscross jump, you know, I was starting, you know, I tried to like, you know, but I didn't fit. Through maybe about like after eighth, ninth, and then ninth grade, kind of like figured out I didn't culturally grow up like that, like a black person. So it was, you know, but
so
how
you
I
black
did,
enough to be black for this neighborhood.
Yeah. And I wasn't, you know, and then I would go to these parties where there's like, they're all kegs and there's a bunch of white people. And I kind of felt like a little left out, but I grew up with a lot of Mexican people. So I was around a lot of Mexicans when I was younger. And so I kind of like, and Latin people, I kind of grew up with them. And, you know, like I kind of like got along with them more. So I kind of like started, I would hang out with them and stuff like that.
Do you
like
speak
that.
Spanish?
A little bit, you know, enough. A little bit, enough. Yeah.
So in the jail, did you hang with the Mexicans?
So here's how I go that. See over there in Florida. Yeah. I would hang out with Latin people. Cause I knew them from the street and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when I came back here, they always ask me, who are you going with?
This is the jail that asks this?
The police will ask you this for your safety. And I'll just say, I'm with the homies. I'm with Mexicans, you know, the brothers of the homies.
Yeah.
And when I started going to jail around here, by this time I had started using heroin and using fentanyl and stuff. And I just realized I was just a junkie. Because some guys would come to my door and be like, hey, they'll be like, oh, I'm Big Sniper from Eastside Reba, or I'm Droopy from Casablanca. And I'm like, dude, just get the fuck away from my door. You know what I mean? Because I'm kicking, coming down on fentanyl.
What were they trying to say when they said those
They'll
things.
Come and introduce themselves. Like, and mostly those guys ask that to see if you have any commissary or anything that they could, you know, I don't know.
Well, this is in the jail.
This is in jail. Yeah.
Okay. So they're introducing themselves.
I wouldn't care at this time. By this time I already, you know, I just want to get out.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the 4 day. Cause usually, you know, if you get caught with anything nonviolent, you stay in there. And out in Riverside County, they have a what's called a fed kick, and you get fed kicked after 4 days.
they make you leave jail after 4 days?
The FBI or the federal government doesn't want you to stay in there if it's a nonviolent crime after 4 days.
Because the jails are too crowded.
Too crowded. So you, so I'm just, it, it's the longest 4 days ever, you know, and I'm.
Is it?
I'm there, you know, I'm just, yeah, especially if you're an opiate addict. It's just like you start, when you start coming off that stuff, you start hallucinating, you start sweating cold sweats.
So, okay, so I think I've caught up on what you're trying to say here. Let's pretend that you did heroin on Monday, you get busted Monday night, and now you've got to go cold turkey.
Oh, the minute I get in that police car, I'm gonna start kicking. Like on the minute I get,
so
the,
even
just,
that
just
night.
From the just from the anxiety of me. Oh. Me knowing that I'm not going to have the shit is I'm going to be fucking, I'm going to start withdrawing right there.
Do the police appreciate and understand this?
No, well,
or are they as ignorant as I am?
The police, they know and they understand. And I guess in the county jail, I heard now before I had went there, they told me, the people in the street would tell me, hey, don't worry. They have a methadone or Suboxone in the county jail. And that, I guess by the time I got there, they withdrew that.
They stopped doing that.
Yeah, this brilliant guy named Chad Bianca. Yeah, this really brilliant guy that's one of the Oath Keeper or some. Part of some secret gang or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, like, you know. And then,
so explain to me this. Let's pretend that you did have those two drugs at the jail. Helps you on your come down?
Yeah, I mean, it's what I will see. Look, it. I'll tell you right now that when you're supposed to wait 48 hours, you don't use anything after it's out of your system. Then you can take the buprenorphine, Suboxone. Well, Suboxone is just a name for it. Buprenorphine. But sometimes it doesn't work like that. And you take it and then you start kicking harder. You start withdrawing harder from it. So you have to wait for it to get out of your system. And so then it will, you know, and when I went to the drug program, they'll give it to you to test you and how your body takes to it. Mm-hmm. And I just would, you know, the first time I thought I wasn't going to make it through the detox because I took it and I flipped out again. But I would just keep taking it, and it's a beautiful drug, man. It takes you right off through after maybe about 4 days. It goes in and it gets in your system, and it withdraws away. I still take it.
Great.
I still take it, and
it's
made me able to live life.
So for Sheriff Chad. And would be Sheriff Chads.
Or to a lot of these.
Hold on. You know, I'm speaking to them.
Yeah.
You're not doing anybody any favors by making people go cold turkey. And you're not a tough guy. And you're certainly not a Christian. You're not helping people when you do this. These scientists have created these drugs to help people who are trying to come down. And once you come down, you're a reasonable person. And you could probably cooperate in the legal system and all that stuff if you're not like freaking out, right?
Oh yeah. You inside the jail, you know, like, you know, I've seen people that were like that. That were a little more, you know. There's some people that were high strung than me, and they flipped out and like beat people up in there because they were, you know, like they weren't just calm, you know. And.
And that's the wrong guy you want to fight.
Yeah, because
he's got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
He's got this superhero strength.
Yeah.
And he's angry as he's ever been.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I flipped out in there and I had to get removed from the cell that I was at, the pod where I was in. You know, the cops came to remove me and like, you know, like the people didn't want me in there no more because I was kicking the door and I was screaming. Mm-hmm. And there's some people that would, you know, are able not to, I guess they go there and they're able to not do that. But by the end of by the third or fourth day, they take me back to another pod, another cell. And it's always seen, this happened to me twice. It always seems that I end up with a cool person that understands and I'm able to. And then all of a sudden, they say, hey, it's time to go, you know, And so I'm pretty sure that if I did a violent crime and I was had to stay there a couple months, maybe I'd be able to, you know, after, you know, I'd probably be able to come down and maybe I'd probably go without sleep, go without eating for a couple weeks, but maybe. But those first 4 days are the hardest. And
So, okay. What would, if I'm making you in charge of all the jails now and all the prisons. A guy comes in on heroin. What is the perfect situation?
I would say that if you take somebody off the street that's an opiate addict, I think that they should get methadone. Not buprenorphine, because it takes a while to get situated to.
Right. So methadone for 4 days, and then the guy is reasonable.
Well, I think that they're going to have to stay on it. It takes a long time for you to get off.
Well, I understand, but
that.
You're saying, though, you're going to get kicked out of that prison anyways in
4 days.
Well,
by that time, methadone for 4 days. Yeah, you just give them methadone. Okay. Yeah.
So let's rewind a little bit to the heroin, when you were actually doing heroin.
Yeah.
Because that's a drug that I've read a lot about in books and novels and seen in movies and stuff. Is it like that? Do you feel warm and beautiful? And
yeah,
soft?
Heroin was cool. Heroin was a good drug. And actually, everything was going fine until some guy up there in the, you know, like, I don't know, they just brought fentanyl into the scene. And
can you make love on heroin?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something right now. Like, I love my girlfriend and everything, and I love, you know, women and everything. But once you start becoming an opiate addict, and I'm pretty sure it's the same thing for her, you really don't care about. I mean, it's all right. I mean, I do, you know, it was cool. You know, I would, you know, like, but, you know, you just don't really have the want or caring to be going after dating or having sex is not there anymore. You just care about getting high. Just, you know what I mean?
Constantly, you're well, they say that in AA that's one sign of addiction is you're always thinking about where you're going to score next.
Yeah, it's your.
Is that how it is on heroin?
Well, unless you're rich or something like that, or like you're selling heroin and you got a good business acumen and you're able to sell heroin and use it, which I've seen done before, you're going to usually, if you're one of these, some people, they're just, they, you know, like they're not able to, like, you know, think of ways to come up on money. So they, they're just always kind of like, you know, and then there's lazy people that think that everybody's going to get them high all the time. That there's, you know, if you're just like that, then you're going to struggle with your addiction.
Tell me about your experience, though.
Me, I always would go to, like, you know, get stuff because I sold pills and I sold drugs. But after a while, I kind of fell off my hustle on that. And I just started, like, you know, and then I started breaking in houses and stuff like that and stealing stuff,
really?
Jewelry and things like that. And then I thought it was a little risky. And so I started breaking into construction sites, which is a little less risky. And breaking into.
Hold on. What would you get at a construction site?
Copper, tools.
And where would you sell it?
And to fences that I knew on the street, the different people I knew around there. Yeah, copper, tools, Home Depot. I go to Home Depot and steal, walk out with like a cart of stuff from Home Depot and put out of the emergency exit and have a car parked in there. Or, you know, sometimes I just go down the street with all that stuff with the cart. You know what I mean? Like,
just boldly.
Home Depot doesn't have carts to stop like at Bonds. You know what I mean? When you try to go out.
So you're saying when you're in the midst of your heroin, we'll even call it abuse at this point. Because it's not like you're
it's
doing
an addiction,
it casually.
It's an
you're
abuse.
Addicted.
Yeah.
Now, step two is I need money for my heroin. So anything you can steal, you're going
to
steal.
Yeah. Except things like I didn't like to steal excuse me, I didn't like to steal from people I knew, mm-hmm. and or steal or get myself into by stealing from a drug dealer or something like that. I didn't do things like that. I would just go to, you know, an like a lot of out there like Elsinore, there was a lot of abandoned houses and abandoned businesses. Mm-hmm. It's upside down. They don't got a lot of work for people and things like that mm-hmm. out there. And a lot of places closed down. So, like, I would go to these places and like, go to the outside electrical box and cut that. Well, you know, first make sure power is off. Go inside to the inside box, circuit box. Cut that and then just drag these thick copper lines out. And I wrap them up and go to strip them. And go the next day to the place and maybe collect like $400 or $500.
That much?
Yeah. And, you know, or I would spend there all night with a friend and ripping out the with sledgehammers, ripping out the wiring out of the walls and stuff like that. And that was a lot of work, you know. But then I just started going to Home Depot and Lowe's and just going and walking and taking tools. And, you know, and I go, like, you know, up to like, you know, here – maybe like $700, $1,000 is the most I've ever made. But yeah, you know.
Okay, so you got $1,000 now. Then you go to the guy that you know that can sell you heroin.
Yeah. I'll be a pretty set for maybe about, if I had $1,000, I'd be set for like a week. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
all?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you can. Yeah. Does the whole $1,000 go to heroin?
Pretty much.
And that only lasts a week.
Yeah, pretty much. But then I'll come up with some during that time, or sometimes I'll lay over into something else. And you know.
So explain to me, and by the way, thank you for telling me all this.
Yeah.
Because we hear about it, but
yeah,
you should only really trust the people who were there.
Yeah.
And you were really there.
Yeah, yeah.
So $1,000 of heroin is how much?
Well, I wouldn't buy it like all at one time. I'd probably buy like a three pack or something like that.
And three
grams of heroin.
3 grams. Now a gram is... I always thought that a gram was like a sugar cube size.
Yeah, a gram is like $50 of heroin, but a gram of fentanyl.
Is it about the size of like a dice or
yeah.
a sugar cube?
Yeah, yeah.
So 1 gram.
So you get it for about $100.
$100. And how long does that last?
Maybe about like a day and a half or okay. something like that, or a day and a half. Cause I smoked it, and people they shoot it. I think that they got a little bit more when fentanyl came in. It was people just stopped overnight, stopped using needles. Like everybody, mm-hmm. everybody would just smoke it off foil, cause it's way too strong to shoot up.
We thought that fentanyl in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so fentanyl. See, heroin all of a sudden started having it in there. Out of you know, one night I smoked some, and then I felt like, whoa, I feel weird. You know, I was like. And then I would like, oh, I just want to do, you know, I'd try to find different people. I'm asking, is that fentanyl in it? I don't want it. I don't want it if it has it.
People can figure it out right away.
Yeah, you can figure it. And then after a while, I was like, you know, like I figured out that, you know, everything was having it in there. And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden I would, I'd be like, do you have any heroin? They'll be like, oh, we yes, have fentanyl. And I would like, oh, okay, fuck, I'll just take that and I'll do a little bit, and then I'll be like, man, I don't like this. And then I was like trying to find heroin again. And then I'll smoke a little heroin, and I'm like, you know what? This stuff sucks now.
Compared to the fentanyl.
Yeah.
And then
after that, I just started buying fentanyl and, you know, doing that, you know.
How much is fentanyl cheaper or more expensive?
Fentanyl is a little more expensive. Like a gram of fentanyl started out as $100, and I think it's now like $50.
Oh, it went down in price.
Yeah, it went down in price.
Why did it go down?
Just Mexican cartels with the cheaper innovation of getting it over here.
They made
like
more
that.
And were able to get it through.
Yeah, and more, yeah, to get it through. It all comes from Mexico. And actually, it comes from China, the precursors.
Mm-hmm.
The other night I was looking about one of the first people out there in Mexico that was actually a Chinese businessman that made pharmacy, he was a pharmacy technician, or he just had a pharmaceutical business, and then he basically met up with the cartels And they were like, you know, they were like, he started making, I think got a little greedy or whatever. I don't know what the case was, but he started making a lot more money selling them the precursors so they could go out and make it on their own, mm-hmm. you know?
So, okay. So fentanyl now is $50 a gram.
It's $50 a gram.
Hold on.
50 to 70.
I'm trying to remember. What was heroin before fentanyl a gram?
Heroin, a gram was about like $60 a gram.
So it's a little cheaper than heroin.
Yeah.
It's cheaper and it's more powerful.
Yeah. It's more.
So that's why we have this problem we have now.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know if this is true or not, but up in Canada, I think that they have like a fentanyl program. That's what I heard. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know that they have something that they have a program with. Just, you know, and it's like they're, because they were having a lot of people die up there. So they just have up in Vancouver, they just have a fentanyl. You sign up and you go there and they give you, I don't know how many times a day that is, you know, but you okay. withdraw from it a lot more time. If you're on a run with heroin versus you're on a run with fentanyl, you're going to withdraw from the fentanyl with fentanyl a lot more times than you're going to draw from heroin.
What do you mean withdraw?
You're going to end up being sick. You're going to end up like wanting to go out and get some more. I don't know.
Okay, so there's been lots of books and movies about heroin where it almost romanticizes it, where you got like Brad Pitt on heroin looking hot and he kind of like falls asleep a little bit. Sometimes people fall asleep with the needle in them. And then there's like people like Lou Reed with the song Heroin and the Basketball Diaries, where they're just kind of nodding off slowly and like drinking Coca-Cola to like stay awake so that they can ride that edge where they can still feel that nice vibe.
Exactly. Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Is that what you use too?
I would Pepsi or Coca-Cola. It's always, you know, like get my, you know, the heroin and I smoked it. I didn't shoot up because I've always been, even if I got to go get a blood drawn or anything, I look the other way. I'm not into needles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I would get my heroin in the foil, a straw, whatever. And I always go to the store first and buy a Polar Pop or whatever. And I just have or a drink or, you know, caffeinated drink.
Because you didn't want to fall asleep on heroin.
Well,
you want to feel it.
I liked kind of like being in between awake and sleep. You know, I liked that feeling. Now, some people, they don't like that. They're like, you know, crystal meth, cocaine, they like to be up.
Right.
And stuff like that. And I used to like that a little bit. And I would, whatever, I did. But I realized that I liked opiates a lot more because of that relaxing and a euphoria that you feel. And if you're asking me the difference between fentanyl and heroin, and now, well, think it's a kilo, there's 2.5 pounds or something like that. Okay. And they would just stretch the shit out of it. And so when fentanyl came along, it was much more powerful that people would... Like for example, back in Chicago, or a long time ago, people wouldn't like the heroin or wouldn't want to go to that. If they hear you that two people died, then everybody will go over to that drug hole to get that heroin because that's the one that they wanted. You know,
where people were dying.
Yeah, they want the strongest one. You know what
I
mean?
Wow.
Yeah. And
did you ever act that way?
No. Well, no, I mean, I smoked it, you know, and it was...
No, but what I'm saying is that's almost like an advertising. Like, this shit's so good, it fucking killed these people.
Yeah.
Would you also want that?
With heroin, when you smoke it, you don't... It's like pretty much physically impossible to die from when you smoke it.
So you were like, those guys fucked up. They did it wrong. But that is definitely the heroin I want because it's strong.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't, I caught the era of heroin where it wasn't, you know, or at least maybe I was, because I was just smoking it, that I never really got a choice like that. You know what I mean? I was just...
You get what you can.
Yeah, I got what I could out here and over there in Riverside. But I when fentanyl came along, it was a lot more stronger. And it now I will tell you though, heroin, there's a, I like how weed kind of has like notes, mm-hmm. if you want to say, like, mm-hmm. like a little, heroin had a lot more like little, like kind of notes, feelings to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but I don't know, because when I got good fentanyl, you know, it was really good. And sometimes you'll get some fentanyl that was really good and really wasn't, you know, they didn't have cut it with bad, something, you know, bad, you know. There was fucked up things that they started cutting it with, was like horse tranquilizer and all this crap that there is no, what the hell is that? Naloxone, Narcan for there. You're out of gas. You're not gonna, you're done. If you overdose on that horse tranquilizer stuff, you're going to be fucked. And, right. Yeah. So,
okay. So let's talk real quick about Narcan. Have you ever done so much that you needed the Narcan?
Well, I found one of my friends and I was like, hey, you know, you know, let me smoke with you. And he's like, yeah, sure. And I remember was I smoked and I woke up and it was nighttime and I looked and I felt my forehead and I had blood on my forehead. And I was like, I guess I had smoked and I went out and I hit I was back up behind an electrical box and I hit the electrical box and the guy just left me there.
So you felt and cracked your head open a little bit.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. I felt and I basically like kind of like scraped my head or cracked my head. And
and your smoking buddy just let you bleed?
Yeah, and he's some asshole that, you know, whatever. He's not a friend, but
yeah,
you know, usually, you know,
there's no code among drug
to takers. Me there is, and I've maybe about 15 times I've saved 15 different people.
Have you really?
Yeah. And whether we had some Narcan, I could found some, or I got ice cold water. And
is that what people should do if they don't have Narcan?
If you don't have Narcan, you should always try to go get like as much ice cold water in volume as you can and splash it on that person or put ice on their private parts.
Oh,
that will wake them up, or under their armpit.
So you're doing anything you can to wake them up.
Yeah, to wake them up. Yeah, and always try to give them CPR. Give them oxygen to their head, to their brain. Because if they wake up, they might wake up, but they might wake up brain dead.
You know, so have you given CPR to people, mouth to mouth?
Yeah, yeah, I have.
You're a hero.
And I'm talking about people with, you know, dirty people with smelly breath. They haven't brushed their teeth in like...
Did they barf on you when they woke up?
No, but it just,
that's good.
You know, like,
you're a hero, bro.
I you know, I'm not a hero. I'm just somebody that cares, you know, and plus somebody that doesn't want to have a murder charge, because if you do let somebody die and they find out that you did that, then you're going to end up going to jail for murder.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
okay. So you've
especially
never,
if you're the one that gave it to them,
you've never had to do Narcan yourself.
No, because you can't do a lot of people think that, you know, if you have Narcan and carry it around like this girl's, I got Narcan, and I'm all, well, you know what? Somebody's got to administer it to you. You're being asleep. You know, you know what I mean? So usually like, I would always keep Narcan on me after that. And, it would always happen and somebody would always, and I would just, you know, and they'll wake right out. It's a pretty good stuff. Sometimes I have to do a couple of them maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
So okay. I heard that when people do Narcan, they're feeling really horrible when they wake up.
Yeah, it makes you feel like shit. And one time, like, One time, I have a congestive heart failure from using meth, and I just didn't take care of it for a long time, and I was just using meth, and I was smoking meth, and I was smoking fentanyl, and it, you know, I started feeling really weird, and I was sitting in the middle of a field, previously that night before that, I went to this place where I'm not going to say because that would get me in trouble, and I robbed this generator. I cut into the fence. I broke with a bolt cutter on one property, and then cut into the fence on another property, and brought this shopping cart and got this generator and put it on the thing and dragged it across the property. Now I'm dragging it across the next property, and there's sand, and I'm dragging with a shopping cart with a generator in it across the sand, and I drop this fucking generator. And so I try to pick it up, and when I pick it up, I piss my pants. Mm. And that's a sign from, you know, that's just, you know, your body giving out on you, you know. And I took the generator to this guy that I fenced, and I said, I don't feel well. I'm going to go, and I'm not going to wait for him to get up, you know, cause he was just early in the morning. It's like 5:30 in the morning. And I brought the generator to this guy, and, he wasn't up. He's an old man. His nephew was up and the kids were getting ready for school. And, you know, they all knew me and everything, you know, and it's just like, they were all, you can say you want some, and I was like, I'm not feeling well. Just here, I'll come back in like 5 hours or something when he wakes up, and I'll collect my money or whatever. And I went to this field, and I smoked some fentanyl, and I heard my heart just like pumping weird. Mm. And I called, so I had somebody call the ambulance for me. No, I was with some people in the middle of the field. I smoked some fentanyl, and I didn't feel right. And the corrupt AMR people from Riverside County, ambulance, said the way the people treat you out there in Riverside is like, you're just a bad person, you know, like.
So, are you in AA?
No, I'm not. And in that is, I went to, rehab. I went to one out here at the Muse Treatment Center, which is a great place.
Mm.
They really took care of me and my girlfriend.
It's called Muse, M-U-Z, or yeah. Like the band?
Yeah, Muse, yeah, like that. They're,
and you guys both went there together.
See, and then see, that's the thing over there in Riverside County. The public places. This was private. I had to get insurance for me and her. But if you just, they say, oh, we got help for everybody, and a lot of these people, they got a significant other that they don't want to leave in the street. They don't want to, you know. And so when you go, they want to bring you there, they want to separate you from that person. Mm. And this place, they didn't do that. You know, the one here in Culver City, they let us have the, they said, technically we're not supposed to let you stay in the same room, but they let us stay in the same room.
And how about that?
Yeah. And so we came the first 2 days, cause you have to have a 48 to 72 hour period where you let the drugs come out of your system before you could use the Suboxone or the buprenorphine. And so that, at least we got to come down like together,
yeah,
and be in the same room.
Was that a methadone come down?
No, this is from the fentanyl.
Well, I'm saying, is it cold turkey, or do they give you?
Yeah, they don't give you nothing, because they don't give you methadone, because it's if they see a methadone, like I was saying, it's methadone is more closer to all those other opiates.
So you're just cold turkey.
Because it would be the use, if you use methadone, then you'll have to come down off the methadone.
I see.
So what was
those couple days cold turkey like?
They were horrible. Like at first, I They give me these comfort meds. See that what's good about this place is they, all those other rehabs that they don't, nobody knows anything about drugs over there in Riverside County. They just, you know, try to make you come down before they give you. And over here, they give you like comfort meds, like, gabapentin, certain like melatonin and stuff like that, like herbs and, like different other little relaxing drugs. So sort of try to help you the best you could. So the first night that they gave me like a combination of all those drugs, I actually fell asleep. And I had this weird dream, sort of like Wizard Oz type of, where I was trying to grab these trinkets on the ground that were all shiny and like crazy stuff. And then it switched to like my father. I seen him and he's dead now, but I seen him in the dream and just crazy, just really just off the wall stuff. And when you come down like in jail, it's like you're kind of dreaming, but you're awake and it's weird and it's like hallucinating. It's really, you know, my best advice to anybody that ever wanted to get off it at their, I would say go out and don't try to get methadone, try to get buprenorphine and go and try to find some, you know, get buprenorphine and during the 72 hour to 48 hour period or vice versa, try to go buy some Xanax, even if it's not prescribed to you from the street, buy it off some people, get some Xanaxes. And some Seroquel, that will not anything, so you could sleep through that what do you call it, Xanax, Seroquel, things that really just bring you down to go to sleep.
It's funny you're,
and that's what I'm not saying that's legal or anything like that, but I think that that's what you should do, that if you're gonna do it at home,
yeah,
you know, and you don't want to go to a drug rehab, you should just, you know, buy some diazepam and some Seroquel that will put you to sleep. Be careful with Seroquel. It's kind of gnarly stuff. You know what I mean? It could hurt you. But
so, okay. Now, you're mostly clean. Or are you all clean?
I'm clean. I'm clean, but I just take a buprenorphine and gabapentin, and this is like pretty much it.
How long have you been clean?
About a year and a half now. Me and my girl have been clean for about the same time.
Congratulations.
A year now. Yeah.
That's very good. Yep. What made you go clean?
You know, it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things. One, for me, because I don't want to just, I want to, you know, do something with my life, that, you know, and for two, my health. You know, I haven't really had any symptoms or had any, you know, I don't feel good. Sometimes my heart skips beats and stuff like that, you know, and I'm on other medicines, for four different medicines to take for.
You seem healthy.
Well, I just, you know, I still try to, I have not relapsed, and I think the only thing that could ever break my health back down again is maybe if I relapsed and I started using crystal meth again and using those drugs again. And I don't know, who's to say, after a while, because there was a period where after I got out of the hospital that first time, I told you guys with the twisty mustache and everything, I stopped using crystal meth. And so it was about a year where I just did fentanyl. And actually, I was actually all right, you know. I was up my health, you know. And the misnomer about fentanyl is every time you do it, you're going to have a chance of overdosing, you know. Once you're used to it, you're not, it's not going to, you know. The only thing I think that could maybe have an effect, or you could maybe after a while, is if you get some stuff with horse tranquilizer,
right?
And that's the problem. I never knew when that was going to happen, you know.
Do you remember that moment that you decided to quit?
It was for a long time. It was like after I got out of the hospital, I really wanted to quit using fentanyl. But that's the thing. You can't just little by little try to get off of fentanyl, because if you need to keep the same amount of fentanyl that you're using, or else if you like either if you people, I've seen people try to quit, or I've had lazy people that didn't want to hustle to go get fentanyl, and they just want to smoke a 20 and then bother people. Those people die because they don't stay up on the drug. They don't stay up on getting the the same amount of you know, every day. They want to use whatever they can get, and those people always overdose.
So you're in the hospital and you're like,
yeah, I got to change my life, basically. Basically. Right.
Okay, so it's been a year and a half. Has there been any days where you were super tempted to, like a friend showed up with fentanyl and offered some to you? Have you ever been tempted in this last year and a half?
A lot of times when things aren't going right, like when, you know, maybe I'm looking for jobs and stuff and looking for, you know, like, you know, or just, you know, I was for about, maybe the last 5 months, I've been right before 2 months ago, 5 months ago, I was homeless, and I was still, but I was sober, homeless, and I'm like, what the hell is the point of being out here like all sober, you know? Because it does take the edge off of being out there, you know what I mean? And I understand why a lot of these people, stay on drugs, because I don't know, you know, I just think that the government doesn't want to help people, and they only want to help you the way they want to help you. But that's not the way that, from the point of view of a person that's out there on drugs, that's not what's really the reality. The reality is, you know, and once you do get sober and you do want to excel, they don't want to help you do that. They want to maybe suggest going back to a program again. You know, a lot of people, they just won't even hire you if they know you're homeless.
Well, let's, this is a perfect segue. You're working downtown now.
Yeah.
Was that hard to get that job?
No, it wasn't. It's a good place.
Did they ask about your address and all that?
No, they didn't. They didn't ask about but I think they just assumed that, but because I have been living with my sister lately, so they just assumed that I had somewhere to live.
So that's what you wrote on the application, that you lived with your sister. And so let me ask you about Inside Safe. Inside Safe is a program that the new mayor of LA, Karen Bass, has created. It sounds like for people like you, for people who can't get an apartment right now. And
really? They have apartments for people?
I mean, they've got something like either a motel room or something, like anything other than the street, because the Olympics is coming. And so she's...
Yeah, she really wants to clean this fucking place up.
She doesn't want people on the street, which is understandable, right? And so maybe I can help you try to reach out to them.
Yeah, that would be... I didn't even know that existed. I didn't know it existed, you know?
But you're nervous, though, that these governments may want you to go to AA and things that you don't think that you need right now.
Well, like, you know what me and my my girlfriend or my wife, we need just a place to live. We need a car. You know, we need things like that just to be normal, just to keep, not to have these ups and downs, and keep, you know, we're past the point of, and you never ever get past the point in it. Like I said, I was out in Riverside County, and they have no recovery. I think in the city of Palm Springs, they have a lot of recovery places, you know, because they got a lot of people that have kind of party out there. But in Riverside County, they don't have any recovery places. They got maybe a couple places here and there, but they don't. But out here in LA, if I would have stayed out here this whole time in Culver City, they had a lot of recovery. Mm-hmm. Like they had a lot of different places that where I was going to everyone every night, you know, like, you know, and yeah, it's always good to stay in AA. It's always good to stay, you know, and you meet people that are just like you and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's always good to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what's helped me and my girl as us together. And we both told each other, hey, no, that's not a good idea. Or no, mm-hmm. you know, like, don't think about that. You know, like, you know, there's always good. It's just right now is bad, but it's going to get better.
Yeah.
And we've been sticking like that and things have been good for us, you know?
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
As we wrap up, tell us if we see somebody living in a tent on a street corner or sidewalk, how should we help?
That's a good question. You know, like, to me, to be honest with you, and I'm going to be your honest, you know, if you got $20, give it to them because they probably needed to go get high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to solve that problem right then and there.
For that night.
For that night. Yeah. But if they befriend that person and, you know, every time, you know, stop by a couple times and give them $20 and what mean in between that. Talk to them about getting sober and ask them,
really?
Do you really want to be, you know, like this, you know, try to talk to them and try to provide it, you know, and outlet and ask them, do they got a girlfriend that they love out there? You know, even though she gets high and, you know, don't like, you know, just, you know, assume, you know, a plate of food is going to be, I would hate when people gave me fucking food, you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, unless sometimes I was really hungry,
yeah.
But I could come up with that. See, I'm different. There's other people that they were, you know, they're just like, I see some of these people and they don't even know what planet they're on. You know what I mean? And, you know, like.
I've heard a homeless person say, if you starve on these streets, you deserve to die because there's so much food.
And that's true, too. And the help is, and you know what? There's been help long before this mayor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's help. They just, if you're a single person, you don't have a girl or a guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there, if you're a single person, you can go get help.
And like the Salvation Army on Hollywood Boulevard, they always have food. There's a lot of places that always have food, right?
But it's gross though. You know, I think that like a lot of people need to stop like thinking like, well, I'm just going to like put this all, you know, I wish that there was people that really, you know, if they really care, they're going to go out and get something good. And you're going to make that person so fucking happy.
Have you been to this church?
That
over
place
here?
Is shitty.
The Hope Church is bad.
So
too.
I walked by there one day and like we were like, you know, and me and my girl, we got money. We already been working. We have this job now, but we already, you know, like I had a little side hustle before and I saved like $3,000. You know, that I've just had, like, I've had. Plus, then when I got here in Glendale, I was working at the Grandview Memorial. And, you know, I made another $1,700. And we have food stamps. So, you know, I was just like, you know, hey, babe, let's go see if, you know, they have a good breakfast there. You know, just to, you know, because we're not above it. They go in there, and it looks like somebody threw up on the plate. You know, they have like this shitty ass food and it's like, you must be, I'm like,
interesting.
And right in front of the guy, I walked up to him and I threw the plate of food with the plate in the trash. I was just like, this is, you know, these people are still people. Don't insult them. You
okay.
know what I mean?
So I'm going to do it. I'm going to give $20, but you're saying no. They're going to use it on drugs.
Yeah.
And be okay with that.
Yes.
Because if they don't get the $20, then what happens?
Well, I mean, if you came up and you went out into a decent place like McDonald's or something.
Okay.
And you walked up to them and you said, hey, here you go. Here's, you know, a Big Mac, something major, you know, it's like, and
yeah.
it's a large fries and a drink.
Yeah.
And you put it in front of them. And, you know, like, you know, or you went person asked them, hey, do you got, like I said, are you just here alone by yourself? You know, I mean, this person could be their girlfriend. They could be their boyfriend. Maybe they're gay and the two gay guys. And you know, you make sure you ask them if they got somebody else with them before you give them. You walk up to them and hey, what do you want to eat? You know, and I'm not saying that you should always, but most of the time they're probably going to want money and be like, hey, or do you want some money? I can't do both. You want some money? You want to get high? Here. You know what I mean? So, and then befriend that person and go back and talk to them and see, and just kind of like, you know, just, you know, that's the righteous thing to do. Talk to them about, I don't know if you're a God person. I am. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's helped me a lot is, I'm Christian. My girlfriend, she's Islamic. And you know, we both pray to, you know, like God, which is basically the same God, you know. Mm-hmm. Before we go to bed, you know, we both pray to our, you know, and ask God for strength, you know what I mean? That's what I've done, you know, is God asked the Lord for some strength, you know, and to make the right decisions, to love myself, you know, and do that, you know, and basically just try, you know, or meditate. I don't know if some people aren't into the Lord, but you know, that's what I'm into and that's what she's into, you know.
Well, Sherman, you've been fantastic.
Thank you.
Do you have a Cash App or PayPal or anything like that?
No, I don't. I don't. Okay. Yeah.
Well, then we can do this. If you're listening to this and you have...
I have Facebook, though. I have Sherman Gray.
Oh, you
Gray.
Do?
Yeah, the Sherman Gray. Yeah.
Sherman Gray.
Yeah.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Reach out to Sherman and wish him a Merry Christmas. And if there's things that we can do that can help you, I'm going to put this up on our website on hereinla.com, and I'll link to your Facebook.
Yeah.
And if people have jobs for you, what kind of work do you like to do?
You know,
sounds like you can strip copper. Yeah. They got that job.
Yeah. Construction stuff, you know, like construction stuff or cleaning or anything, you know, like anything. I'll do anything, you know, as long as it pays, you know, like $20 an hour or something like that, yeah. You know, something that's, you know, you can survive on. Yeah. But, okay. Anything. Yeah.
Well, Sherman, bless you. I too am a Christian and I think that God has looked out on both of you.
Yeah.
Because it's rare, I think, for somebody to do 20 years of drugs and look as healthy as you are. And, I mean, you seem to be doing okay.
Yeah.
And all you need is just one more step. So if this Inside Safe program actually works, that could get you back on the right path, right?
Yeah, I didn't even know about it, but I'm gonna check it out. I didn't know that... Actually, I think my mom was telling me about it. I just think that if you really want to be sober and you really want to do the right thing, then you'll do it. If you don't and you don't see that happening, if you feel like you're in good health and you feel like you could have another 10 years of drugs, you know, then, you know, if that's what you like to do, then that's what you like to do, man. But like, that wasn't what I saw in my future. You know what I mean? So everybody's different, but you know, I just think God bless everybody and Merry Christmas to everybody.
Well, thanks so much for telling us your story today. And, if we see you downtown working, we'll wave at you.
Yeah. Wave at me.
All right, man. Thank you. Woo! How great was Sherman? When you stoke us, you're saying, Merry Christmas, bro. Thank you for helping two people who have the biggest needs in LA, a roof over their head. So shout out to our Patreons, Nancy Rommelman, Sean Atlow, Matt Mills, Sean Wallace, Greg and Molly, Jamie Taylor, Mark Johnson, Kira Ann, Barney Grinke, Ben Welch, Jen Adams, Trevor Wilson, Bree Wild, Dougie Gyro, Christina Up North, Robin Carey, Adam Shorn, Ben from Down Under, Chris from the ATX, Gregor, and Phil. To be a Patreon, just go to patreon.com/hereinla. Want to support us, but you're already tapped out from the capitalistic holiday season? No problemo. Post this episode on your Facebook. If there is ever an episode to post on your Facebook, or on your Twitter, or on your TikTok, or on whatever you got, isn't this it? You can even scrawl it on the bathroom wall. Just make sure it's spelled correctly. H-E-A-R in L-A. Thank you, Patriots, and Merry Christmas.